This is The Full Spectrum. The show provides a wide range of news and competing opinions. The commentaries, beliefs, and viewpoints expressed by segment host and guest do not necessarily represent those of WJSU-FM, Jackson State University, or its administrators. The content of this program is for informational and/or entertainment value only and not meant as an endorsement or recommendation in lieu of professional guidance on relevant topics.
It's the full spectrum. We got news.
Entertainment.
Interviews. And so much more. It's the full spectrum.
On today's show, the ongoing effort to improve Mississippi's child care system, and we hear from the attorney who is back in court as he continues his ongoing battle to bring down the state flag. Welcome to The Full Spectrum for Monday, August 20th. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. This past weekend, the Mississippi Low-Income Child Care Initiative's Child Care Leadership Team held its inaugural meeting in Jackson. The statewide group was created to strengthen and promote improvement to Mississippi's child care system serving low-income working families. Joining us now to tell us all about the meeting is the Executive Director of the Mississippi Low-Income Child Care Initiative, Carol Burnett. Welcome to you, Carol.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Always great to have you. So talk to us about that meeting this weekend.
Well, we chose to have our inaugural meeting of the Child Care Leadership Team on the same day that the Mississippi Department of Human Services held their state plan on the federal child care development plan. Because we knew that child care providers were going to be traveling to Jackson to attend that public hearing. And we were encouraging child care providers to travel to Jackson to attend that public hearing so they could give their comments. So that public hearing occurred in the morning, and then our meeting was held in the afternoon to talk about issues that providers would like to see be the focus of our advocacy efforts moving forward.
Okay, so we've got two things to talk about, because I know the last time I saw you, you were telling me you're concerned about some of these changes, the changes in the process of being qualified as eligible to be a child care provider. So first, let's stick with the meeting and tell us what were some of the things that you were hearing from the attendants in terms of what they would like to see you all doing as part of your advocacy?
A number of the providers are concerned about the process for getting parents through the application to get child care assistance. The Department of Human Services is working to eliminate the waiting list that exists. It was a very large waiting list. They're moving through that process. And so child care providers are very pleased about that, but concerned to make sure that the procedural obstacles are removed and that working parents receive the support they need to get children into the child care centers. We had a speaker from a newly created entity. The Department of Human Services has created the Early Childhood Academy. And we had the head of that new Early Childhood Academy speak at our meeting, Dr. Micah Knox with the Mississippi Community College Board was there to speak, and a lot of providers had some questions about the resources that Early Childhood Academy is going to provide child care centers across the state. There were a lot of questions about the process for becoming designated as a standard center under the state's new requirement that all child care centers achieve that designation. So the concerns all have to do with making sure that parents get the subsidy they need, providers get the resources they need, so that they can continue to provide child care for low-income working families.
Talk to me again about this Early Childhood Academy. Is this, where is it located, first of all, and is it actually a center that children would be going to, or is it a centralized point of information and guidelines for other centers?
It is a network. There are locations at community college sites all over the state of Mississippi, and these decentralized locations are intended to be regionally located so that they are accessible and available to child care centers all over the state. And the idea of these academies is that they will provide training, technical assistance, resources, and support for child care centers who are participating in the child care subsidy program. So, for example, the local child care early childhood academy here on the Gulf Coast is at the Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College. There in the Jackson area, it's located at the Hines Community College. And a child care center should be able to go to those early childhood academy sites and get perhaps materials that they want to check out so that they could enhance learning centers in their child care center. They could check materials out as if they were checking books out from the library. They will be able to get training that they can go to that will meet the required continuing education hours they need to meet. They'll be able to get help completing the standard center application that is now a requirement for being in the child care subsidy program. And Dr. Knox was at our meeting to explain the function of these early childhood academies and what child care centers could expect in terms of support.
I'm initially excited at the idea of this. We know so much emphasis now is being placed on early childhood education. What was the reaction of some of the child care providers who were there at the meeting over the weekend to this news?
They were, the early childhood academies have been in development for quite some time, and child care providers have been hearing about it. And some of those early childhood academies are further along than others. Some child care providers were a bit skeptical because they had heard about it and not seen it yet. And others were less skeptical and, in fact, very pleased because their local early childhood academy had gotten up and running and had already been helpful to them. So it's a little uneven around the state right now. I think once it gets up and running, it is going to be quite a helpful resource to child care centers across the state.
And I don't want to get into the next topic yet about the other meeting and some of the concerns you had for changes there, but I would like to say, because I think there is a common issue here, is sometimes to start something like a child care center or with other issues, the paperwork and the data is so heavy that a lot of people are just like, huh, they're scratching their heads. So in your opinion, Carol, do you think this early childhood academy will be able to help some people through that maze of information?
Yes, I'm hoping so. And in fact, we at the Low Income Child Care Initiative are working with the Early Childhood Academy to share with child care centers what the academies offer. We're trying to make sure centers know what they can expect from those academies, and we're also trying to identify where there may be any kind of gaps of what centers need that we may need to fill. So we're sort of monitoring the implementation of this and trying to mediate and be a helpful communication support in this process, because it is really creating a brand new system. And, you know, child care centers, especially the ones that have been in the child care subsidy program for a long time, have seen the systems come and go. And they're a little, like I say, skeptical about yet another system that's supposed to be a support for centers being implemented. And they're kind of in a wait and see mode to determine whether it's going to be as helpful or not. But we are hoping that it will be. I have to say the indications are, especially from Dr. Knox and her attitude and her efforts to be supportive of centers, I think certainly from the leadership that she's providing, there's every indication that they're trying to do all they can to help centers.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more with Carol Burnett, the executive director of the Mississippi Low Income Child Care Initiative. Stick around.
Support for WJSU comes from the Mississippi Link. Each week, the Link has connected, integrated, and communicated urban, rural, and community news from around the globe to people of Mississippi and beyond. And now its website provides daily news and events at MississippiLink.net. Welcome to your world.
Welcome back to The Full Spectrum on Cool and Current WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty, and we're talking with the executive director of the Mississippi Low Income Child Care Initiative, Carol Burnett. Carol, the last time I saw you out, we were talking about the other meeting that happened on Saturday, but about the implications of changes that were underway in terms of qualifying to be a child care provider. Talk to me about what your concerns were that day we talked, and about what happened at that meeting on Saturday.
Yes, we were very concerned. So the state has imposed a requirement on all child care centers that want to participate in the child care subsidy program that they become what the state is now calling a, quote, standard, unquote, center. And the standard designation requires the completion of what the state is calling an application. It's really an extensive survey information sheet about the center that includes a lot of information, not only about the age of children, the number of children, who the staff are, the training and credentialing of each staff person, et cetera, but in addition, a lot of information about the curriculum the center uses, the degree to which the center is in alignment with the state early learning guidelines, et cetera. It's a significant and extensive application that centers are being required to complete. It's the first time centers are being required to do something like that in order to participate in the subsidy program. And what I mean by participate, they have to do this application in order to get paid for services they offer to children in the subsidy program. And if they don't complete this application and they serve children with the subsidy, the center will not get paid. So it's critically important to the child care centers that they get this done. And it is quite a burdensome undertaking, and centers have had some difficulty completing this task.
And let me ask you something, Carol, because is there a basis on which to reject some of these centers, or what would that basis be? Because as we know, not all child care centers are created equally, and you have some people maybe in their home who have four kids. They may not have the same kind of educational program that some other centers have. So talk to me how this is going to impact different types of centers.
Right. Well, you're right that different centers have different capacities for completing this, and some have found it something that they were able to do, and some have found it very difficult to complete. And when I saw you, we were very worried because out of about 1,000 centers, only about 400 or so had made it through this process. And we were, at that point, looking at an October 1st deadline. Well, one of the things we learned at the meeting on Saturday is that the state has acknowledged that this process wasn't launched as well as it could have been, and they are now extending the deadline until October of 2019 for this process to be completed. And so we were very pleased that the deadline has been extended. The
and will these early childhood academies be able to help some of these centers with that application?
Yes, and that was the point I was about to make, that I'm very happy about. The early childhood academies are offering centers with assistance completing the process. We at the Child Care Initiative have offered assistance completing the process. And we're hoping that between our efforts and the state's efforts to offer support, that we're going to be able to get everybody through. See, what happened was the federal child care block grant got reauthorized in 2014, and there were a lot of new rules that were created in the program. And one of the new rules was that every state has to come up with some strategy for quality improvement in the centers that participate in this federal program. Well, Mississippi quit implementing the old quality rating system that you and I have talked about that involved centers having to achieve certain star levels, and the star levels were quite expensive to attain, and the state wasn't offering centers money to help achieve those star levels, and so it was kind of pricing out a lot of centers that serve low-income families. So it was a good thing that that strategy was abandoned. And this new strategy, the idea is that the standard center application will collect information from each center about what they're doing right now in the classroom with kids as learning activities. The early childhood academies are supposed to get this information, and the information that they solicit from the centers in their region is what they will base the training on that they create for those centers to help address areas where the centers need help. The state has said that there is no, right now, centers will not be denied in this application process. They may get conditional approval, and the condition may be that they get training in this area or that area, but they won't be denied. There are a couple of hardline requirements that centers do have to meet. One is they have to be licensed. One is they have to have all their staff completing certain basic health and safety trainings that are federally mandated. But in terms of the curriculum and the early learning guidelines and the learning environments and that sort of stuff, that doesn't have an approval criteria, because those are the areas where the information that the early childhood academies receive is going to be the information they use to develop the training they offer to centers in their region. And that's the new strategy the state is planning to implement to address this new federal requirement that we improve the quality of services to children that are in the subsidy program.
And I just want to ask you this really quickly before I let you go, Carol, because there are two objectives here. You, as an organization, the Mississippi Low Income Child Care Initiative, have been working to get more vouchers to low-income women so that they can work and have a place to leave the child. And, of course, everybody wants these centers to provide better service. Is one fighting against the other? Do you think that these new requirements are going to mean less centers are going to be available?
Well, that is exactly what we're trying to prevent. And the fact that the deadline got pushed to 2019 is going to help make sure that does not happen. The other thing that we didn't want to see is we didn't want a lot of money directed away from services to kids into some building some new quality enhancement system. One of the things that's been really helpful to prevent that from happening is that the Congress in this last budget at the federal level included a big increase in this child care development fund. So Mississippi got an additional $30 million, which is allowing the state to serve more children. So DHS has reported that they are using that new money to eliminate the waiting list, and they're going through the waiting list and serving children and issuing certificates. They're whittling away at that very large waiting list with this new funding that they have. And so that is a very promising development, that the funds that came in are being directed to services to children, because, you know, the waiting list was an indication of the many, many families in our state who need child care assistance.
Wow. Well, you had a busy weekend, Carol, and we'll keep following this. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear from the lawyer who's trying to bring down the Mississippi flag.
Jackson State University's College of Education and Human Development has an ongoing mission to educate teachers, school leaders, and related personnel with the best practices. Offering a variety of degrees from bachelor's to doctoral, the college is a university leader of student enrollment and online degree programs and proudly partners with the U.S. Prep National Center for Educator Preparation Transformation. More information on the College of Education and Human Development, 601-979-2433. We're Jackson State University.
Welcome back to The Full Spectrum on Cool and Current WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. The issue of the Mississippi state flag and whether the inclusion of the Confederate battle emblem on the flag sends a hostile message to black people is back in the courts. Attorney Carlos Moore has filed an appeal of a lawsuit that was dismissed on June 19th. But on different grounds than those argued in the original suit. I spoke with Carlos Moore earlier today. So, Carlos, the original suit was dismissed in June. Give us the update on how this is back in the news.
I am representing Mississippi Rising Coalition and three individuals, some black and some white, and we feel that the case has merit, and so we did not appeal the ruling of the judge on the equal protection argument, but we are appealing on our new theory under the Fair Housing Act, and we believe that the judge did get that wrong and that these individuals have standing and that there is racial steering going on improperly in Ocean Springs by the mandated flying of that flag. And so we believe that we'll be successful in the Fifth Circuit, and that the Fifth Circuit will send it back down to the district judge for trial.
Okay, so explain to listeners what racial steering is and why you believe it's relevant in this case involving the flag.
As you know, Ocean Springs sits along the beautiful Gulf Coast where I'm from, and it's just surprising that with Moss Point being 75% to 80% black, that Ocean Springs, some 20 miles up the road, is only 7.5% black. We believe that Ocean Springs is intentionally flying that flag on the municipal property, City Hall, and other places in the municipality to send a message, a clear message to African Americans that they are not wanted in that city. So we believe they are steering African Americans to places like Moss Point. Stay in Moss Point where you're welcome. Don't come over to Ocean Springs, we believe, is what they are saying. And Moss Point does not fly the flag. Other cities, some other cities along the Gulf Coast that are more welcoming do not fly the flag. But Ocean Springs, with this entirely white city council, has decided to fly that flag, and it's just very offensive, and we believe it is racial steering.
Talk to me about why the residents feel that way. What have they been telling you?
We know that under Democratic mayor, the flag did not fly in Ocean Springs at City Hall. And then when the Republican mayor got in there last year, he put the flag up. Then he took it down because the blacks were in uproar. And then the city council passed a resolution mandating that it fly. So he had no choice but to put it back up. And so they knew that it was offensive. But despite the uproar and the outrage of the African-American citizens and some even some of the white citizens that value diversity, the city council said, we don't care, we're going to put it up and we're going to mandate that it flies. So you had people from Moss Point, from Pascagoula, Ocean Springs, Goshen, all of the municipalities in Jackson County really in an uproar about this. It's just very offensive, and anyone that flies that flag, or any city that flies that flag after what happened in Charleston in June of 2015 is doing so with animus, racial animus.
We know that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is considered one of the most conservative courts in the country. Talk to me about how you think they're going to receive your argument.
We believe the law is the law. It does not change whether or not a conservative jurist or a progressive jurist is looking at the law. And so we believe it's clear that these individuals had standing the case law. That we've referenced is clear, and the statute is clear. The Fair Housing Act was created to prevent things, discrimination in housing, and we have some case law that we've cited out of Cleveland, Ohio, where an individual was in a city, and the city passed an ordinance that was ruled to be improper because it was trying to prevent diversity in that city. And so here we have a city that's putting up a very offensive and treacherous flag that stands for the subjugation of African Americans, killing, rape, you name it, of my people, and we're just not going to stand for it.
Now that you filed this appeal on new grounds, give me a timetable.
We filed the appeal on Friday, which was August the 17th, the City of Ocean Springs has 30 days to file their brief. We will respond. We'll be able to file a reply brief, and then we'll sit and wait for a ruling by the Fifth Circuit, or we'll see if the Fifth Circuit grants us oral arguments. We believe if they grant oral arguments, we'll likely be arguing the case sometime between January and March of next year in New Orleans. And then the Fifth Circuit will issue a ruling, a written ruling. If they rule in our favor, we'll go back to the district court judge and begin discovery and eventually have a trial. If he rules in the city's favor and affirms the district judge, we'll have a choice to just end it or petition the United States Supreme Court for cert. And this is something that is very dear to our hearts. We believe we're on solid ground, and we're going to fight this to the very end. It will not be over until the fat lady sings.
Hey, Carlos, I got to ask you. I don't want to talk about the extent of it because I guess you can never know, but we do know there is a reemergence of white supremacist ideologues in the country. And I have to ask you, because you are committed to this cause, you've been working on the flag issue. Why do you think this is happening? There's talk for so long about how far we've come, and in many ways, we have come a long way. But the reemergence of this ugliness, why is it happening, and why is it accelerating?
I believe it's accelerating and continuing to happen because now we have someone who inhabits the White House that is comfortable, who is verbally said there are good people on both sides of the debate, talking about what happened in Charlottesville. I didn't see good people on both sides. I saw one side that was an agitator and another side that stood for justice and equality. But as long as the person with the highest and most powerful elected office in the world, the nation in the world, is comfortable with white nationalists and white supremacists, I guess it's okay to some people.
Well, Carlos, I don't have to tell you that we will be calling you again when there's some kind of action on your appeal. So thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
And thank you for listening. That's our show for today. Don't forget to catch Metro Morning Live with Rob J tomorrow at 7 and again at 10 on JSU TV, Comcast Channel 14. You can catch their live stream on Facebook. Just type in Jackson State TV, one word. We'll be back tomorrow at 4 with more of the Full Spectrum right here on FM 88.5, or maybe you're listening online at WJSU.org. That option is yours. Up next, Latin Jazz with host Dale Morris. Have a great evening.